Everybody, welcome to the Break It Up podcast. This is my dad's show. I hope you don't get butt hurt. This show has a lot of opinions. Some you might agree with, and some you won't. This show is not suitable for children. My name is Adrian, and welcome to the show.
All right, everybody, this is the Break It Up podcast. I am Adam Jewell, and today I have a stand-up comedian. He is the host, one of the co-hosts of the Industry Darlings podcast, and also he is doing some work with the Your Mom's House podcast with Tom Segura and Christina Pajitsky, which is a very funny podcast, and he has been on that recently, so if you haven't checked it out, go check it out now. Josh, thank you for joining me on my show.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me. Thanks for reaching out.
Absolutely. I actually got to, I not get to know you, but I kind of first heard of you is actually about this time last year. You were on tour with Tom Segura. Me and some buddies went and saw you guys in Fargo, North Dakota. That's kind of how I first came to know you. So,
oh, dude.
That was a fun show.
Which show were you at?
It was the first show, I think you guys did two shows that night. And yeah. We were at the first show in Fargo.
Oh, nice, nice. They were both awesome. Fargo was so much fun, actually. You know, I really liked it there.
I'm really hoping that, because I know he's got another tour coming out, or that he's doing right now, and I haven't seen any, because I live right in the dead center of South Dakota, so nothing fun comes around here, so we either have to go to Fargo or Minneapolis, so I'm hoping I see some dates soon for that. So,
oh, yeah, I'm sure he's going everywhere next year, so...
Yeah.
He'll be around.
Yeah, and so that's kind of how I first got to know who you were, and you had an amazing set. It was very funny. It was probably the first comedy show I've ever been to, so, you know, I didn't know exactly what to expect. You know, like, I've been to concerts and stuff, but, you know, comedic openers,
right,
and
yeah,
whatnot. I mean, you were very, very funny. I thoroughly enjoyed your set that you opened up with, so.
Thanks, dude. I appreciate it. I have a funny, like, happenstance from that evening. I was doing like a joke that just kind of happened to me that weekend. And I, in the joke, I said the word retard, and, the context is lost in this discussion, but it wasn't in a context where I was calling someone that, or I just said the word, and a woman wrote me this extensive Facebook message about how she stormed out and she wished she wrote the tickets and I'm a piece of shit. Can we swear on your podcast?
No, you're fine. That's the great thing about doing this on the internet is we don't have censors. So you
well, yeah,
it on
yeah,
the head.
Yeah. I just didn't know. Some people are like, you know, we like children listening. I don't know. So, so this woman wrote me this really long message on Facebook or whatever. And I just think it's hilarious because she was like, we were so excited to see Tom and you ruined it. And... meanwhile, he's about to go up on stage and do a bit that he's now famous for,
right,
from his Netflix special, where he, in fact, says the word as well. So it's like she would have just been very disappointed anyways, but it was that was the hilarious irony inside of it. But, yeah, so that was like one of the only times I've ever gotten a message of that nature from someone was in Fargo. But other than that, I thought the shows were like super fun. I didn't notice her leaving during my set or whatever, but.
Well, that's one of the things, like, I kind of wanted to get into this episode with you about is, like, just that culture and that relationship that stand-up comedians and audiences and just society have is, like, and one thing I've never understood is, like you said, this lady wrote you an email. It's like, when you're going to a comedy show, like, most comedy to, like, that I know of, even like with clean comedians, like, let's say a Jim Gaffigan or a Jeff Foxworthy, still have some jokes that are like somewhat edgy, maybe not quite as bad as like other comedians. It's like you're taking a lot of time out of your day to email or write or something to let someone know you're
well, yeah, it's just that it's gotten so easy to do those things. Like, it used to be like you have to write a letter and you have to like figure out who to send the letter to and you have to like buy a stamp. Now it's like you just lay in bed. You don't even have to get out of bed. You can just like grab your phone off your nightstand and just torch a business or musician or a comedian or whatever you want. So, I mean, everyone has that power. I know that the left gets labeled as the most outraged, and there is plenty, trust. You know, that's become like people's reason for being alive on that end of things. But there is also this woman, the way that she was speaking to me, and like perusing her profile to see what kind of maniac would write this stuff to me, she was definitely on the right.
Right.
And I've noticed from doing, I used to do morning radio in my hometown of Buffalo, New York, and there I had plenty of people who were on the Christian right who wanted to like silence me and get me fired and things like that. So I've experienced it more from that end of things. I understand now a lot of people are experiencing it on the left. But I just feel like it exists regardless. It's always going to, it always has. The people that used to get outraged, they would write those letters and you'd be like, man, you put all that effort in, and they still write them. But like these people, obviously they have, there's just more of it. It seems like more of an onslaught because, like I said, it's easier now. So even the casual outrage fan can just write a Yelp review, you know, because they're, it's really narcissism at the end of the day, a lot of it too. Like this woman was like all about her and how it affected her and like her life. And that's what these Yelp reviews too are like. It's like, my eggs were cold, you know, this waitress was mean to me. Just like, look right. at me, feel bad for me.
I've gotten to the point where, like you said, for example, like the Yelp stuff, that I used to use it as a matter of like, if I was in a new city and I wanted to find like a good place to eat, I would use it. But now, like, I'm like, I'm not going to do that because, yeah, you might see maybe a great restaurant or whatever that is awesome, but then some jackass like had one bad experience or was too big of a whiny baby that, you know, he's like, I'm gonna give it 0 stars and make this restaurant look like shit.
Yeah, and you rarely get to hear their side of things,
right?
Like the waitress side of things or whatever. I mean, even there are some cases where like you see on Facebook, I think it's hilarious when like the restaurant owner is just as big of a psychopath, so he'll go on the Facebook page of the business and just like act like a maniac and say some very harsh things to the point where you're like, whoa, this place is run by a psycho. This looks terrible. I think that's fun. That's just like the world burning, though. That's really what the internet is doing, though. It's just exposing everyone's mental illness, whereas before you had to really get to know someone to understand how deeply ill they are.
Well, and the biggest concept with, like, especially social media, you know, Facebook, Twitter, is that, you know,
right.
before that, if you wanted to make a statement that might have been a little controversial, you had to really think about it and, like, you know, before you just said it out loud because you couldn't hide behind a keyboard to say it. But now, like, it's just, you can say whatever the hell you want willy-nilly, you know, on Facebook or Twitter and hope that these people don't find you, you know, person to person and deal with it that way. But that...
Yeah, that's a good point, too. Yeah, for sure. Exposes it on all fronts.
One of my first questions is, so, like, kind of going into that is, so as a comedian, how do you know, like, what kind of material to use or try in whatever you do? Like, do you try new stuff based on the area or... Like, is it just hard to read a room sometimes, or are you pretty good with knowing, like, what you can perform at a certain area?
I mean, comedy is comedy, really, and it's, like, it's really a numbers game. Like, obviously, you want the most people of all groups and ages to laugh, because it's just better odds that way. So, sometimes you have to, like, understand who you're performing in front of, you know? Like, if you're at a VFW and it's all people that are like over 50, you can't really come at it a premise the same way depending on what the subject matter is. And kind of have to skew it so that they can relate to it to a degree. You know, like you can't just be like, so on Twitter, you know, like in front of your grandma or whatever. So there's that aspect, I guess, if you're going to say, if you're talking about like reading a room and adjusting things for that. But for the most part, like on a real show, I mean, I'm just doing my act, but that's been tried out in every room from shitty open mics to, you know, theaters over a long period of time. So you kind of like bang out the dents in it as you go, you know?
So like in your experience with doing stand-up, if you have material that you know is maybe on the more edgy side or offensive side or whatever it may be, like, do you, at this point with kind of like how culture is and how much people are, how easily someone could get outraged, like, do you get nervous about delivering certain jokes, or are you just like, fuck it, I'm gonna say what I think is funny, and I hope someone else does.
The thing is, like, you can make a joke about anything, and that's part of the challenge and, like, the excitement in it is making a joke out of controversial things and making it so it's undeniable, so that somebody who, like, so it's almost impossible to get outraged at, and anyone who would is irrational. You know what I'm saying? Because they're negating context and everything else. So that's the challenge. I mean, it just makes you have to think about it a little bit harder and make sure that it's, you're going down the right path. Like, of course, if you're just saying inflammatory things, thinking, oh, I'm going to get laughs because I'm being shocking, that's just nonsense. And that's, like, hack anyways. You know, if you want to, like, go in there and say outrageous things to trigger people, that's one thing. And I've seen plenty of people try and go that route and then get indignant themselves when the outrage comes. It's like, oh, you didn't expect that to happen when you're up there, like, saying you don't think the Proud Boys are too bad or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, for no reason other than to say it. Like, there was no insight there. It's just a bunch of people blathering outrageous nonsense. That's different than, like, writing a joke about something that is maybe perhaps taboo and having, like, an interesting thought on it to the point where it's so undeniably ridiculous and funny. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So, like, I know you're a Buffalo Bills fan, and I'm really sorry to hear about that, but
this is a particularly bad year.
I'm a Cincinnati Bengals fan, and it's never a fun year, so, but say, for example, like, if you go to, with you being a Buffalo Bills fan, like, if you go to a place like Miami or, you know, the New England area or whatever, and you crack jokes about their team, like, have you seen people, or maybe not even your own experience, but just maybe other comics and stuff, that, like, what's the dumbest thing someone's, like, been upset about going to a stand-up comedy show, and it's like, hey, man, this is the least offensive thing I could say, but you're getting pissed about it?
Oh, well, that's kind of to the first part, if I were to go into Boston, say, or Miami, or somewhere like that, I wouldn't bring up that I'm from Buffalo on stage regardless. So it's like, why bother bringing that slack? I'm not going to bring it up. But I will say this. I've seen comics come into Buffalo who are, like, Dolphins fans or Patriots fans, and they bring it up, and it doesn't go well. There was a comic, his name was Tom Brady, and he's a very great comic, this guy. He's on Letterman, had a lot of credits, and he came to Buffalo, and people booed just at his name, being Tom Brady, like, didn't even give him a shot. And he eventually changed his name to, like, his father's last name, which is Takkar. So Tom Takkar, look him up. He's a co-host of Nikki Glaser's show, You Up, on Sirius XM.
Okay, yeah.
But his name used to be Tom Brady, like, not but 3 years ago or whatever. And it was, like, right, that Buffalo weekend was, like, the last straw. Like, he was already thinking about it because it's, you know, the greatest football player ever. But when he came to Buffalo and I just introduced him, Tom Brady, people booed the shit out of him the second he walked on stage. And he's like, that's it, I'm changing it.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to probably do a set after that, because the whole time that's going to be in the back of people's minds, like, nah, fucking Tom Brady, piece of shit.
Oh, especially in Buffalo, we fucking hate that guy, so.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's not even in my division. I'm just like, give it up already. Like, I am so tired of seeing your shit.
I respect all the stats. I get it. He is the greatest or whatever, but, like, fuck, man, he's been the Emperor Palpatine to our fucking little rebellion since I was 14 years old, so I'm really over it.
And I don't want to turn this interview into just about football, but I do have to make this comment that, like, I've been telling people, I'm like, I don't want to hear any more about any current age quarterbacks being the greatest of all time if you're not even allowed to touch them anymore, because that, to me, doesn't seem fair. It's like,
that's a good point. I bet you Troy Aikman sits in the booth every week and thinks about that as well.
So it's like, of course you can rack up all these stats when every time someone even, like, breathes in your face, they're getting a flag. Like, that's bullshit to me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hear you.
So,
but to your second part of your question, I've seen people get upset about literally anything because, and again, it's not a left or right issue. It's not a political thing. It's only recently been put in that context. But if you do comedy, you know that it's been just there to begin with. It's just narcissism, really, and self-absorption, really, because, like, it's made about themselves. Like, if you're a normal person, you go into it, and you go, let's just use the extreme example of rape. And, like, rape jokes are a very touchy thing to touch on. Like, you have to make them really good if you're going to do them. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you can't just swing for the fences on something like that and not really, like, have anything behind it. So, you know, there are some good ones out there, I'll tell you what. And
well, Daniel Tosh got a lot of heat for that a few years back. Like, he was a part... I was going to say, that prime example, Daniel Tosh got in a lot of heat for that a few years back.
Oh, well, yeah,
and
that was a unique example where it was, like, an exchange with someone in the crowd.
Right.
I'm just saying, though, like an actual written, planned rape joke has to be just good when you do it. Again, undeniable. And there are some that exist. But say somebody was observing that example, then, like, a good one, they would go, I'm upset about that because it brings up my memories. And there are people that can do that about divorce. They can do that about any minor thing. And because they have trauma attached to it. And so some would argue, oh, well, you know, because they have trauma attached to it, they should be allowed to be upset about it. And it's like, okay, but here's the thing. They paid money to come in and watch a show. And that's the risk you take when you buy a ticket at the end of the day. And there's people in here, you know, you talk about, like, I mean, I shit on myself primarily throughout my entire set. So there really is no victim but me. But one could argue that they relate to some deficiency that I bring up about myself. And it could be like, that triggered me or whatever. And then what am I supposed to say to that? It's like, it happened to me, bro. Like, I'm talking about my life.
Right.
But still, that doesn't stop people. That's all. That's my point. Like, people are going to do it regardless. And there are plenty of clubs in this world who understand, like, people's outrage and the significance of it, and also, like, are level-headed about what it means in terms of, like, comedy and how it relates to, like, someone's act, you know? Again, like, if you're just saying inflammatory things, the club can be like, what are you doing? But if it's a joke and they understand the context of the joke, they'll know when the outrage is not warranted, you know what I mean? It's not as bad as some people make it out to be. That's really the thing. That there are some comics who will just complain up and down about it, and they are most likely the ones that are just saying the outrageous things to be outrageous and not getting the response that they covet, and so they complain. You know what I mean?
Right.
And those people will exist forever, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, you obviously know this better than I do with you being in the profession of being a stand-up comedian, but there's different, like, classifications or groups of comedians. I mean, you have the, you know, the cleaner, no swearing comedians or the family friendly comedians. And then you have the, you know, the ones that are a little bit edgier. And then you have, like, the shock comics that, I mean, specifically, they, like you said, they're just trying to find the most offensive joke.
Classified as far as that goes, like dirty, clean, nothing like that. It's really classified in terms of, like, experience. And like a clean comic who's really good and a dirty comic who's really good,
right,
have more in common than an open micer who's dirty and a guy who's, you know, working being dirty. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, because you understand how to, like, present things. Whereas if you're just an open micer, you're just saying shit, like, to be wild and thinking that's comedy for the time being. Until you either learn better or just never realize you're making the mistake, and you just do that open mic until you die.
Right. And that's, like, one of those things that, like, I guess the benefit of having the internet and social media is that, you know, if you follow a lot of these comedians as a fan, like, you start to realize that these guys are pretty normal people, whether, I mean, yeah, they might say some pretty edgy stuff or whatever in their routine, like you said, based off of their own material or their own life or whatever, but I mean, a lot of these people are family people, they have, you know, kids and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just like a lot of, I think before being able to say, like, let, you know, follow someone on Instagram or Twitter, like, you kind of base your judgment off of what you're seeing in their 1 hour special on Netflix or whatever it may be.
Of course, yeah. I mean, and people sometimes fail to realize that, you know, that person on Netflix is a human being. You know what I mean?
Yeah, at the end of the day.
An immensely flawed human being, by the way, which is articulated many times in a lot of Netflix specials. So it's like, when you're on, it's hilarious to me with sometimes the standards that comics are held to, in terms of, like, when they do say something that gets the ire of the outrage community, like, that's the guy that just, you know, like, for 20 minutes also talked about what a piece of shit he is. And now he says something like, just an observation on something political, and you are taking his word like it's the news. Like, we hold comics to a higher standard than most politicians. It's bizarre.
Right. I mean, like, just the joke.
I just talked about how his dick doesn't work for a half hour, and now he's just making the comment about the president, and you're going to lose your mind and be like, you should retract that. I mean, my co-host on my podcast, Matt Bergman, he's a Washington, D.C. comic, is on the road all the time. He just did a show where he, like, made a joke about Tucker Carlson, and someone, like, came up to him outraged about making a joke about Tucker Carlson. Like, you got to have more fair and balanced material here. You can't just throw Tucker Carlson under the bus like that. It's like, it's a fucking joke, dude. It's comedy. You know?
Yeah,
it's just bizarre.
What I've observed,
they don't even hold the standard to the news. Like, the news isn't, on either end of things, isn't fair and balanced, and they're not, like, they don't even do that with the news. They don't, like, get crazy about it. They just accept it. But for a comedian, it's like, why are you pointing this out? Like, relax. It's comedy.
I don't get why there's, I mean, more people, or some people, I should say, are more outraged by the hypothetical situation of a joke rather than some of the, like, actual things that go on in society, like, that, you know, politicians and whatever, like, the kind of, you know, the real day stuff, like, people are like, you know, that's just regular society. But like you said, you crack a joke about something hypothetical, people are like, well, that's pretty offensive. Like, you can't say that. It's like, turn on your news station, because that's the shit that's going on, and that's not funny, because it's actually happening.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why, really, at the end of the day, my point to it is that it happens on the regular, of course, but it's all really just white noise, and it really has no effect on what most good comedians do or don't do, and it doesn't really, like, change the industry's opinion very often. And people will bitch and say that it does, but I mean, like, I guess from my experience and from the people around me, it really isn't as bad as some would make you think it is, you know what I mean?
Right.
But, yeah, because it's all just frivolous crying at the end of the day, and most people are starting to recognize that. And there's more comedians selling tickets today than there ever has been, so I mean, it can't be affecting too many people.
Right, and that's one of the things me and you kind of messaged back and forth about when I kind of came to you with the idea of the episode, is that, you know, I mean, there's, you hear about it a lot, but to your point, there's still, I mean, comedians now, I mean, are selling out stadiums in certain cases, you know, it's,
yeah,
which is unheard of.
I mean, Bill Burr was on television saying how, like, like, on a hilarious joke about how it's like, we give the troops too much credit, and people lost their minds. The guy did Madison Square Garden like 2 nights ago.
Right.
So it's like, really, at the end of the day, how is it affecting things? Like, Pete Davidson's under the fire right now for making fun of that guy, the eye patch.
Right.
And Pete Davidson's going to be just fine.
Yeah, he's going to be on SNL for a while now. I mean, someone might be like, hey, man, calm it down, but that's about the extent of it.
Yeah, even beyond SNL, he'll be just fine. They're not doing anything to stop these careers at all.
And I think
it's incredible.
I think one of those things too, and I mean, once again, you live in the culture, you live in the career of this, that so say a comedian gets in the news about maybe they said something kind, you know, that was offensive to some. Someone that doesn't find that offensive is going to be like, I think that joke's fucking hilarious. I like that comedian now all of a sudden. You know, it's like you're going to maybe lose someone that didn't understand or didn't appreciate it, but you're going to gain people too because, A, there's people that appreciate, like, know what a joke is, and then people that just think the subject matter's funny.
Yeah, there's that whole, like, no press is bad press thing. And again, it's all dependent on context. Like Michael Richards, that guy didn't gain any fans for his little gaff. You know what I mean?
We still haven't forgotten.
At the same time, what's that?
I said we still haven't forgotten. That was about 13 years ago.
Right, and it's like, while as a comic, like that was, I mean, that just isn't even good as far as an attempt to bail yourself out. Like, what are you doing, dude? Like, it's almost insulting.
Right.
But it's also, I also kind of feel bad for him because it's a guy who had a lot of pressure on him to be funny because he's so well known and he's just starting to do stand up. So he doesn't really understand how to do it.
Right.
So he doesn't really get to be an open micer ever. And you, sometimes when you're in the pit of like bombing and you don't know how to deal with that, you do some irrational things. I'm not saying you do exactly what he did, but I'm just saying sometimes you lose your head and you do some irrational things to try and turn the tide. And so really that's what he was doing, and it was completely inept. So I almost feel bad for the guy because I don't think he has hate in his heart. I think he just was bombing so bad that he was doing anything to try and stop
it. Right.
But at the same time, it wasn't an attempt at a joke, really. And it wasn't definitely not funny. So it's almost like, yeah, dude, you fucked up. But if it's, you know, just somebody who, like Tom, I'll bring that up, even though, you know, it's kind of dead and buried. Like, he had this whole thing with the R word,
yep,
as they call it. And the president of Netflix was like, yeah, I mean, if you listen to the context of this joke, there's nothing offensive to the community about it. It's literally just it's a joke about not being able to say that word. You know, it's arguing their case. So it's all context at the end of the day.
Yeah, I believe he did an interview. I think it was the first time he was on the H3 podcast. And he brought that exact same thing up, that he was getting a bunch of, I guess, letters, and people were petitioning to have the whole thing taken down just because they didn't want him saying the word retard or retarded or whatever.
Exactly.
And he's just like, if you would listen to my bit, I'm making a joke about the concept of you can't say. And he clearly says, hey, we never said it in a sense of making fun of a mentally ill person. He's like, it was just something we would say. And I relate to that 110%. I mean, I work in manufacturing 9-to-5, and you should hear the shit we say on a day-to-day basis.
Everybody of a certain age, and that's like not even an old man thing to say, because you can be 25 years old and remember, you know, back in the day of being a kid and just the words that were spewed out and become a part of your vernacular, you know, and they don't even mean the thing that they mean. And obviously you grow up and you grow out of saying those things, but you know, at the end of the day, they exist still. Like, to ignore them, to ignore words is wild. So.
Right. I don't know if I want to incriminate myself on my own podcast, but like in relationship to, you know, saying the word retard or whatever. And I do have a follow-up question with me saying this, but like I said, I work in manufacturing, and you know, we say some pretty wild shit because, I mean, it's just how the shit goes on a 9-to-5 basis where you just talk like idiots all day. this was brought up, I think, on an episode of South Park years ago, but the word faggot. I use that word so often, but I know in certain contexts, there's going to be a certain demographic that does not think that it's cool to say that. But I mean, I'll just say it, you know, to someone that I think is just being stupid, or like, you know, like it's never meant the same context as what people think that the word means.
Oh, dude, 100%. And that's a word that I used very regularly until a certain age when I said, you know, like, probably shouldn't use this word anymore. And I made, like, a deliberate choice to stop, you know, just because it just was a bad look after a while.
Right.
I mean, of course, you know, you're with your friends, you're going to say ridiculous shit, you know what I mean? But that's everybody. Everybody says ridiculous shit, like, in the confines of your friends who keep things pretty on the DL right. for it.
In my case, you wouldn't want to say it to like your supervisor or someone that you don't know, but I mean, like, yeah. it's in your circle
or, like,
of buddies.
You're not going to say it at a dinner party or at a, like, you know, like where you meet like your kid's friend's dad or whatever, you know?
Yeah. And that's, and like you said, you know, at a certain age, like you kind of had to deliberately make yourself stop or whatever. And I'm kind of at that yeah. point too. Cause I mean, I got two little girls, 1 5 and 1 2, and they're starting to repeat everything I say. So like even shit around the house, I gotta be a little bit more careful with them. Like I can't have my 5-year-old going to school saying douchebag and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I mean, at the end of the day, like I get it. It's like, why do we need to say that word? Like, is it better for, is a world better where like that's not used that same way? Probably. But like, you can't just change history, you know what I mean? And expect literally everyone to just conform and be able to change their ways. You know what I'm saying? That's the expectation that's out of control. Like I understand the motive and the desire behind it. And that's all very noble. But again, you can't just like expect the world to change at a snap of a finger, you know?
Yeah. And
there's going to be some growing pains.
That's, I feel sympathy towards comedians that get a lot of that grief where, you know, you have a certain joke, a certain word, whatever in your material. And, you know, 95% of your audience, you know, will laugh at that. And then there's like that one person or that, you know, a couple people that just don't find it funny. And, you know, on in a person-to-person relationship, like, you know, like I said, if we were using those words and we had someone, a friend or family member that's like, hey, I don't really like you saying that or making jokes about this, you, as a, you know, friend or family, you'd be like, okay, I respect that. I won't right. say that around you. I won't do that. But in your profession, I mean, your profession is to crack jokes, and a joke is about
yeah.
creating hypothetical, you know, situations
and whatnot.
Well, I'll
say this to that. I enjoy having a bit of a challenge.
Right.
Like when I used to do radio, people used to be like, oh, isn't the FCC a pain in the ass? You know, you can't do this, you can't do that. I like having rules that I can work within and then manipulate and still get like a wild message across within the confines of it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like it makes it almost better. Like it makes it more funny when it suggests. And that kind of goes the same way for when you're dealing with a taboo subject and writing a joke on it. You know that there might be people outraged in that crowd. And the key is to get even them to laugh at it. So it's almost like you have to raise your game a little bit. And I think that makes you better, you know? Whereas if it was just unbridled, like to bring it back to radio and give you the parallel universe, like Howard Stern even said doing satellite radio got boring and he wanted to do something different because he could just say fucking shit and whatever else and do anything he wanted, and it made it not as fun, you
right.
know, because he could just, there was no risk and there was no like excitement to that, you know. It's not edgy when it's just allowed.
Yeah, like I said, with
so
those...
It makes it more fun, to be quite honest with you, knowing that there are people like that could very well be in any crowd and tiptoeing through those landmines.
Right.
It gives you that thrill, you know? It's kind of part of the game. It adds an element to it that is enjoyable, I think. That's my personal stance on it, I guess.
One thing I appreciate about comedians, and I think people that appreciate comedy as a whole could agree that great things that you guys do is when there is touchy subjects, when there is like controversial things in the news or in our society, is that you guys try to make jokes like that involve them to kind of take away the sting of those situations. I mean, some people might not appreciate it, and like, but I think a lot of people do. I mean, there's going to be, like we've said this whole conversation, there's going to be a group of people that are like, oh, you can't joke about that. But there's also going to be people that will appreciate it.
There's always going to be people who want to laugh in the world, always. And they're going to want to laugh at, like, the biggest parts of them that are painful. You know what I'm saying? There's always going to be those people. That's why I'm not worried about this whole thing. Because the silent majority are people like you just described who, you know, in a shitty moment in history or a shitty moment in their lives, they would prefer to laugh than to dwell on it and be in some little outrage ball pissing and moaning about it, you know?
When, and another thing I've learned about a lot of the comedians that I enjoy watching and listening to is a common theme with so many of them is that, at least all the ones I've listened to, maybe it's not that common, but that a lot of these comedians, like, they have a lot of, like, I don't want to say mental health problems, but a lot of them have, you know, suffer from depression, or they have anxiety issues, or you know, like, what is it, like, social anxiety, like, people that are normally, like, introverts that don't like talking to people, but are, like, just great stand-up comedians.
100%, yeah.
And see, these people, you know, they're going out and doing this great thing, but I mean, they're the same people that are having a lot of issues on the inside that they're dealing with themselves, and they found a venue to, like, help them through that, and I think that's something a lot of people don't appreciate.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely rampant mental illness in the stand-up community, 100%. I'm also a member of both.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, 100%, like, yeah, I mean, I don't know that people need to sympathize for us or whatever, or, like, take that into consideration, but that's kind of my point, though, to they should take it into consideration when they are deeming a comedian's thoughts as gospel that people should, like, take legitimately and seriously. Like, that's the part that I never understand. Like, when they do get outraged, it's like, well, yeah, this mentally ill person just made a wild statement. Like, what did you expect? You know, like, them to have some sort of sensible message from the pulpit. It's wild to think other than the fact that they are mentally ill. You know what I mean? Like, what are we outraged about?
I just don't understand the people that, like, we keep talking about Tom Segura or whatever as an example, just because he's one I've been able to see lately. That's like, I knew the kind of material he was going to have when I went and seen him. That's the whole reason I wanted to go, you know? And,
right.
And I don't so understand the people that buy the tickets
wild to think,
and get offended.
That's why. So was that woman. She bought a ticket to see Tom Segura knowing that she's going to see that type of stuff. And then she saw me, and it's not like I definitely don't do anything more outrageous than he does.
Right.
You know? So it's like, what was she expecting from jump? And it was just, she just got triggered and went off the rails. So, I mean, it was going to happen after me if I didn't do that. So who knows? But yeah, I know you're totally right. Like, you know what you're getting into when you buy the ticket.
Mm-hmm. The only time I got offended watching his performance is when he made fun of the Cincinnati Bengals. And I mean, that was the closest I was. And
that's like, that was like his team as a kid. But he, like, hates them now. I could never – I don't know what it is. I love the Bills, and I even love them in this moment where they're having just unbelievable issues. But, I mean, I guess it's par for the course, you know. Yeah. I've been with them through thick and thin, so.
It's a sadistic thing. Like, you know what you're in for, and you just have to go along for the ride whether you like it or not.
I think Andy Dalton is the most popular quarterback in Bills history, by the way. So if you guys don't want him, we'll probably take him.
Oh, man. I love the guy. That was one of the coolest things, like I said, that, you know, that whole – when they played each other in preseason, how the Bills, like, gave him a standing ovation and all that. I'm like, that's
– Oh, yeah. He ended our playoff drought, man. He gets more credit than Tyrod Taylor does in that city.
I've never seen a team cheer for another team so much, but
yeah, it was wild.
Oh man, we could just talk about football forever, man. But
I totally could.
How about to end the actual question part of it? What do you say to that person that, and you kind of already touched on it a little bit, it's like, if someone says they're offended by your comedy, what do you tell them?
The best thing now I've realized is to just not even acknowledge them. And because that's what they want more than anything, is to be acknowledged and to feel special. So not even engaging is the tactic that I suggest now. At the time, I engaged. And it makes you just look uglier, you know, because there's no, I mean, I am, again, not a mentally stable person. So I'm not going to have like a fucking PR tactic when I'm handling these types of attacks. So I, you know, throw my barbs in or whatever, and it's just ugly and it doesn't get anyone anywhere. And I eventually did change her mind somewhat, but it was still some passive aggressive nonsense at the end. You know what I mean? Like, right. You're never going to win. There's no winning in that situation. So again, I learned early, very early, thankfully, to just not even engage the people because, and eventually, you know, like in some situations, the swell grows beyond what you can ignore anymore. And those cases are with massive celebrities and things like that. But for the most part, it's, you know, isolated thing. And if you ignore them, it goes away, or they just keep screaming down the well into your fucking inbox, like a psycho. So and that just is fun in itself.
So in the same context, are you the kind of comedian that gets excited when there's someone in the audience that becomes a heckler, or does it throw you off? Like, some comedians
seem
to feed off of it.
No, I just
want to
do my act and have people laugh at it. I don't want a fucking heckler. I mean, have I had to deal with it, and can I? Sure. I don't want to. No one wants to. And if they do, they don't have an act, you know?
I the reason I ask that is, like, a lot of times I see these clips of, I believe it's Steve Hofstetter, that it seems like he's a professional in dealing with people that start shit at his shows, and it's just like it just seems like he's very good at it.
No, I mean, he's fine at it or whatever. He's just as good as most comedians, but that is a charlatan's move. I mean, he just wants YouTube hits, and heckler is a thing on YouTube that seems to drive a lot of traffic to it. So it's like, I don't know this for a fact, but I've heard that some of those things can be manufactured on his account. That guy is, I'm not a fan of that guy in a lot of ways.
Gotcha.
But I don't want to trash him. But yeah, that's.
Well, I don't think I'm calling him
like,
up anytime.
That's not real. That's not really copy. That's just a guy who's like trying to get his name out there.
Right. Well, that's a learning experience for me then, because now I got some inside
info. No, I mean, you're the guy who's watching funny videos on YouTube, and that's what he does. So, I mean, he's successful in that regard, you know? He knows how to get the eyeballs.
So, if I ever get the chance to see you perform again and I heckle you, like, how are we going to, like, do you want me to say something in particular? Like, do you have a bit that would be ready? Like
I'd prefer you just didn't. That would be the best move.
Well, I can give you a lot of material. Choice. I'm like a fat, redheaded, like, just... I'm not very good looking. I mean, I got a lot of material that you could easily pick out right away. Like,
yeah, but here's the thing, and I'll tell you this. This is like not a funny reason why I hate hecklers and dealing with them. This is just literally a comedy reason and a performance reason. I spend so much time on stage shitting on myself that I lose a little bit of that luster when I shit on somebody else. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because you're supposed to be like, you're supposed to get the crowd to laugh at how lowly you are and through self-deprecation. And it's difficult to keep that line of thought going when you're trying to alpha a guy.
That's okay. I can respect that. So I won't heckle you if I get to see you again. Out of respect.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
That would be the
best outcome. It's just no heckling.
Well, I got nothing else prepared to ask you, so meanings And this is about the typical length of my podcast. So, you know, to end it, I kind of just let you talk about what you got going. I can't even talk right now. What you got going on, how people can follow you and keep up with the kind of stuff you're doing. So take it away.
Well, you can check out my podcast, which is Industry Darlings with Matt Bergman. It's on iTunes and Laughable and Google Play, all that shit. And then I'm going to be on Your Mom's House. I don't know, like, exactly when, but pretty frequently in the coming months, growing in frequency in the coming months. So look for me there. First one I was on was number 469 with Felipe Esparza.
Yep.
I might be on the road with Tom next year, here and there. So look for that. And I put all my dates on Twitter, @J_Potter. I'm getting around a little bit here and there. So keep an eye out on that. And that's about it.
Awesome. Well, I hope that you are doing, like we kind of talked about earlier, you know, if Tom comes around here, hopefully I can see you again. And like I said, I'll be nice. I won't be a dick or nothing like that. And, but yeah.
You'll be the first to know if I hear about that. So.
That'd be awesome. I did like... Once again, that was comedian Josh Potter. Once again, you guys can follow him on Twitter @J_Potter. Keep up with him and all of his tour dates that he's got going on, and follow him on Industry Darlings, and also catch him on Your Mom's House podcast, hosted by Tom Segura and Christina Pajitsky. Also, you guys can follow me on Twitter @PodcastBreak. You can find me on Facebook @BreakItUpPodcast. You can find me on Instagram @BreakItUpCast. You can find me on the internet www.breakitupodcast.com. And, well, that's about the only places you need to be able to find me. So once again, guys, wherever you're listening to this, if you could give us a good review, that would only help us in getting the podcast to grow. So once again, thank you guys, and we'll see you on the next episode.